absolutely.
Welcome to the greatest show on earth, also known as the Capital Investment Committee meeting. Come to order, please. There is a quorum present. Representative Gunther, have you reviewed the March 6th minutes?
Absolutely. They're perfect as far as I'm concerned.
So you have moved approval. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes passed again. Just a couple things before we get going on this today. First of all, we have several job shadows in the audience from FCCLA. Those wearing red jackets, with the exclusion of Representative Bennett, who is not one of the job shadows. Would those who are here shadowing please stand up?
Chairman, I don't think we heard. What is the group?
FCCLA. Caitlin, tell them, please. Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America.
Thank you.
All right. This is an informational hearing. No action is going to be taken on our bills today. Technically, they aren't even in our possession yet. That's why we're not taking any action. But we will. We need to get moving on these things, and that's why we're doing the presentations. Basically, we're highlighting bills in two areas, grant program for behavioral health facilities, and overview of the three law enforcement training centers. And so, with that, the first bill before us is House File 2274, Representative Tony Albright. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen, and please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2274 is a bill that addresses some of the gaps in our state's mental health system of care. We all have examples from our own families and communities that have left us wondering what the state can do to address the myriad of needs for people facing mental health crises. Just one of the many gaps in our system is the lack of appropriate crisis beds for individuals with acute needs. House File 2274 is an attempt to bring all community partners to the table, counties as well as the state, with regards to mental health authority, nonprofits, hospitals, and providers, to assess the needs in their community, envision what an appropriate crisis facility might look like, and then work together to put together not just the bricks and mortar, but also the sustainable services. I have provided the committee in your packet with an amendment that is the result of work done with DHS, the counties, and the advocacy community. Mr. Chair, at this time, since it is an informational meeting only, I'm unaware that we can take action on the amendment.
Representative Albright, no, we will not take action on the amendment, but you could continue, you could assume as if it were there, if you wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, for your benefit, this is the result, as I've said, of all stakeholders to the initiative working collaboratively to make the best effort to put the patient in the center of the care given. So I will leave it at that. And with that, I will also introduce to you Commissioner Jim McDonough from Ramsey County, who has been one of those stakeholders who has comments on the process that we followed and some of the attributes that he sees as beneficial to his communities.
Welcome. Introduce yourself for the committee, then proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you, Representative Albright. My name is Jim McDonough. I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner. I currently chair the board, but also I sit on the Regents Hospital Board, and I'm currently chairing that board. I sit on the Association of Minnesota Counties Board, And I'll come back to why those are important pieces, because they're all a part of this continuum and part of the partnership here about what this investment will mean in our communities. And I think the first message I really want to really carry to the committee members is all along the continuum in our response to mental health, there are huge gaps, and all along there are inadequacies on how we respond. And the problem right now that we're living with is where we do have a response, because there's these huge gaps, we get these bottlenecks, and then it causes a problem throughout the whole continuum. And then that impact eventually comes back to us in the community. And for the most part, where we really feel that impact is in our most expensive beds and our most inappropriate beds, in the jails. Our sheriff will tell you at any time 40 to 50% of his inmates are there because of a mental health issue. Very expensive bed, no care, no respect, no dignity for the condition or what drove them to end up being in that jail. Very inappropriate response, but many times that's our only response at that point in time. And many will end up in the emergency bed rooms at our hospitals, and Regions is our main East Metro hospital. Regions, as a partner, has invested in over 100 mental health beds, but at times, every one of those beds, most of the time, every one of those beds is full, and they're stacked up in the emergency room. Again, once they're ready to move out of Regions, though, if we don't have a community bed for them, they're stuck there in a very expensive bed without the right level of care. If we get them into Anoka, Anoka can't get them back into the community, the Anoka Regional Treatment Center, the same issue occurs. And as counties, we have to pay a cost share, so there's a financial piece to that. But there's a community cost to that, because we've got an individual, again, in the wrong bed, receiving the wrong care, but it's stacking up and preventing individuals who need that level of care from being able to enter. This investment that is being advanced here will help us build centers throughout the state by Regions that will be there for crisis intervention and stabilization. And it will help us unclog some of the bottlenecks. But more importantly, it's going to get to the right response to wherever that individual is in that crisis that they might be having as far as a mental health situation that they're occurring. And that, to me, that's the most important piece. This is not a solve-all for our mental health crisis that we have in this state by any means. We've got a lot of areas, both in programming and in facilities, that we've got to look at. But this will go a long ways into helping free up some of those bottlenecks and also, again, providing the right response at the right time for our individuals. I do want to share with you, I also sat on the governor's mental health task force. He convened just over a year ago. All the stakeholders were there. The big thing that came out of that, if any of you had time to even take a look at that, was the continuum and the gaps and along that continuum where we either have no facilities or no programming or we don't have enough, and it's creating these bottlenecks. So this investment is consistent with that task force and the some of the recommendations that came out of that task force about how best for us to start investing public dollars in leveraging community supports and partnerships within the community. And I just want to take a real quick moment, and I've got some other folks from that want to share some of their stories here throughout our state. But as counties throughout, and we're at the Association of Minnesota Counties, I mentioned we're up to well over 80 counties that passed resolutions in support. Our goal is to get all 87. And it's pretty rare for us to get all 87 counties aligned on any one issue. But I'm confident in the near future here we will have 87 resolutions from 87 of our counties, your counties in this state, supporting this investment in our community. I'll end with I'll share with you some of the one investment that we made in Ramsey County that people aren't really aware of, but it's really been critical. Working with Washington and Dakota County, three counties, working with healthcare providers and insurance companies, working with stakeholders within the community, we made an investment on University Avenue, not too far here. It's really basically an urgent care for people that are suffering from mental health. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, they can walk into that building, and we can be responsive to their needs. We moved and shut down our old detox in our old building. We brought detox up there because, as most of you are aware, mental health and chemical dependency go hand in hand in so many cases. And, you know, is the mental health response, the chemical dependency response because of self-medicating, or vice versa, some of both. But we've co-located those services because that occurs so many times. And the last piece I'll share with you is the impact in our communities. I've talked about the emergency rooms in our hospitals. I've talked about the jail beds. The last response is really the most inhumane response, and that happens every single night in our communities. So many of these people end up homeless on our streets because they don't end up in the emergency room, or we don't even get them into a jail bed. This winter, Ramsey County opened up 50 emergency homeless shelter beds for the winter because homeless shelters are just absolutely at their peak. And again, almost always there's some type of mental health situation that is a part of that individual story on why they ended up on the street. So, Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for your for taking time here to hear Representative Albright's bill, and thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. And I think that what we're going to do is ask the testifiers to remain here. We'll take them at the end of each group. So stick around. We got some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I have three more testifiers on behalf of this initiative. Next would be Ms. Julie Ellis.
We would hope that, you know, around a minute each so we can move along if you could, please.
Depends upon what you define as a minute, Mr. Chair. But I'll leave that up to my testifier.
I thought that. Chair Rudall and committee members, my name is Julie Ellis. I'm the Community Supports Division Director for Stearns County Human Services. In my capacity, I oversee services to adults and adolescents with serious and persistent mental illness, those in need of civil commitment, and individuals experiencing substance use disorder. You've heard from Representative Albright and Commissioner McDonough how these projects fit into our continuum of care. One of the things we know is that community needs don't look the same around the state. Support for this bonding bill allows communities to tailor services to their specific needs, allowing us to address the current infrastructure gaps within their own regions. I'll take just a few moments, brief moments, to describe to you the vision for Central Minnesota region. The Behavioral Health Crisis Center will allow access to individuals on a walk-in basis. They will not need an appointment. They can visit on their own, or a family member might bring them in, which is a great alternative to calling law enforcement, which often happens now. If law enforcement does get the call, they will have a place to bring people to be assessed and receive the appropriate level of care, avoiding the expensive costs of jail, detox, or the emergency room. At the center, individuals will be assessed by mental health professionals and practitioners, as well as chemical health staff. A determination of level of care will be made, and people will receive the right amount of care, ranging from detox to hospitalization, or in some cases, referral to outpatient services and a discharge to home with a care plan. Our region has been meeting and planning for the needs of our community for approximately 1 year. Partners in this collaboration include multiple county human services agencies, CenterCare Health, Central Minnesota Community Mental Health Center, multiple law enforcement agencies, and NAMI. With the support of this bonding bill, we will be able to serve individuals earlier and provide follow-up care. This will prevent expensive hospitalizations, emergency room visits, reduces the need for detox visits, and law enforcement involvement, and truly provides better care for people. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Very good.
Mr. Chair, I have Linda Curran, the Adult Mental Health Supervisor from St. Louis County, who would like to provide some brief remarks as well.
Hi, Chair Erdahl and committee members. My name is Linda Curran, and I supervise the Adult Mental Health Unit for St. Louis County, and I also chair the Adult Mental Health Initiative Regional Initiative. And that's the Arrowhead region up there, six counties, three tribes, region three. So similar to my colleague Julie, I spend most of my work dedicated to promoting best practices for service delivery to individuals with mental illness. As you've heard, the needs around our state are great, and St. Louis County and region three, our unmet needs are very similar to those of the governor's mental health task force. We need to start with a comprehensive mental health continuum of care with a clear point of entry. Working with our community partners to assess the needs in our region has given us an opportunity to envision what a really robust and person-centered system of care might look like. One where there are treatment options for people experiencing mental health and or chemical health symptoms, not just incarceration, incarceration, or hospitalization. So I brought a handout of our talking points, which really includes our partners. If you look on the left-hand side, all of our partners, we have a pretty rich Duluth community there and region, lots of partners. And it kind of summarizes the scope of how we plan at this time to address the gaps in our community. Our scope includes working closely with law enforcement, addressing the bottleneck and revolving door. I hear that bottleneck word a lot. Of our current system, having a multidisciplinary team approach, dealing with post-crisis, post-hospitalization, supportive housing, and most importantly, embracing the practice of treating every single human being holistically and with dignity, whether an adult or a child. So I want to just, I appreciated your one investment that you've made at Ramsey County, or one investment that we've made at St. Louis County, is we have embedded us, a clinical social worker, in with the Duluth Police Department. And then the region has embedded a second one. So, and now we have two mental health, law enforcement, beat cops working together, and a homeless outreach person. So we're really building like almost a mental health unit on the Duluth Police Department, which is just having amazing results. So we have already started work to make things better and getting ready for what might come next. So just thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have just one final presenter, Aaron Metzger from St. Luke's.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Erdahl and members of the committee. My name is Erin Metzger, and I manage outpatient mental health services, part of St. Luke's Hospital in Duluth, Minnesota. As you've heard from previous testimony, there are huge gaps in our mental health system in the current care that we are delivering to family members, county residents, and the people that live in our area. And what we're currently doing is not working. We need to do things differently, and we know that, and we really need to work to meet individuals' needs and where they're at currently. Currently, we are putting a Band-Aid on problems and not fixing them long-term. This is why our community collaborative is so valuable. We have come together as a mental health care partners to try to develop the community-driven solution for identified gaps in our individual continuum of mental health crisis care. Our partnerships, as you can see, includes local hospitals, community health care providers, human services, homeless outreach and advocacy, law enforcement, both sheriff and Duluth Police, city council, St. Louis County commissioners, our mayor's office, and other mental health providers within our region, and also mental health specialty court, and we have worked closely with NAMI both at Minnesota level and with the Duluth group as well. Together, we've mapped our regional adult mental health crisis continuum of care to fully understand the needs that we have in our region in order to streamline the access to care so people who need it can receive it when they need it the most. We're asking for state investment in the behavioral health system to continue our vision for a person-centered crisis center that would allow for immediate assessment and support and much-needed ongoing post-crisis follow-up as people are connected with the resources and supportive services they need, provide complete, comprehensive community discharge planning, and ensure that we, again, are meeting individuals' needs. Our collaborative has helped us work on developing key infrastructure necessary to supporting a building, but making sure that we are successful and both sustainable in any project we're envisioning. Your support of this project is key, and it's a key piece of our vision that would allow us to fill some of the gaps in our care and service while making sure that we are leveraging the current resources that we have in our region. Thank you for allowing me to testify this afternoon.
Thank you. And we'll start with questions. I'll begin with a couple of here. First of all, Representative Albright, I think this is an important bill. I think it's a very timely bill, and therefore, I'm wondering, have the sites been decided yet where the crisis centers would be?
I'm going to phone a friend on that one. I think they can articulate the planning better than I can. So who wants to take that, Mr. McDonough? Or, okay.
Uh, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Ratzman. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Administrators. What's envisioned in the bill is a competitive grant process where regions would submit proposals. Now, we have several regions that are pretty advanced in their planning process that you've heard from, but as of now, we don't have identified sites that would be part of the grant process.
Thank you. Would you expect that the bids would come from regional centers, or, I mean, would any city be eligible?
We expect them to come from regional centers. That's kind of the envisioned intent. Now, I would have to double-check our bill language to see kind of how that lines up, but we're envisioning community-based regional approaches to this.
But it will be geographically distributed across the state.
That is the intent, yes.
One other question, maybe it's for you or Representative Albright or someone else. Are there any age limits in this? I mean, are adolescents included or?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I can answer that question. Again, some of this is still being worked out in the planning process, but with the regions I've talked to that are pretty far along, what they're intending and envisioning is that on an outpatient basis, they would really be looking to serve all ages in the community. What's still to be worked out and discussed is the crisis stabilization beds, and in terms of whether youth and what age youth could be sited at a facility with adults is still something that needs to get worked out. There's licensing implications. So, again, on an outpatient basis, we're envisioning, again, the regions that are looking at this would envision and serving broad age range.
No, I think that's important. Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I asked that question of people who were in my office and was assured this really mirrors the presentation we heard yesterday. So this grant program is to Human Services. Yesterday's was Minnesota Housing. So they receive the applications from, I thought, primarily counties. So these facilities are publicly owned, and so can be geo-bonding as opposed to the housing infrastructure.
That is correct.
Bonds. The one thing I was so happy to see on St. Louis County's sheet, Mr. Chair, is how yesterday's bill and this one go hand in hand. Because what they described is yours is short term. And I don't know if you've decided how long that is, but you would only keep them so long. But if there's not permanent supportive housing at that point, then you have the same problem that the hospitals do, and that is you discharge them to the street. And so that second piece, which St. Louis County calls out, the supportive housing that we heard about, permanent supportive housing that we heard about yesterday, and this go hand in hand to hopefully prevent those gaps if we do enough of them. But it's the quantity that's going to make a difference here.
Mr. Chair and Representative Housen, I couldn't have said it any better. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. This is the discussion that we're all having, that we need to figure some of these things out, and I think this is exactly one of the important pieces that we need to deal with when it comes to mental health moving forward. So I'm very supportive of this. I am actually one that, based on the other grants that I've seen or other proposals that I've seen, I think you're actually asking for too little. I'd like to see a higher priority on this one rather than some of the other ones. I'm that supportive of it. But the one question that I have is, as you expand this much-needed care, we're talking about the capital investment. What are we doing to address the operating expenses? Are there bills in other committees that we haven't heard here, or are there plans? I know some of this is integrated with what the county's already doing or the different. But what are we doing to address the operating costs of this moving forward?
I think that's part of the competitive. Representative Miller, that would be part and parcel of the competitive grant process that each entity would submit for approval to the grant program.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, so bonding money has a tendency to get used and then get expended, and this is an ongoing expense beyond the capital improvements. So do you anticipate that there are going to be some budgetary considerations in the future to address this, or are we just going to kind of keep bonding for this, because this is an ongoing problem? So if you have a grant that spends a certain amount of money, that's going to have a termination date where that money gets spent up. So how are we going to address this in the future?
Well, we can't bond for maintenance, so
I'm not talking about facilities. I'm talking about operations, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
There's expenses involved beyond the facility itself. So what's the anticipation for the ongoing expenses of the services that you're going to provide?
Sure. And Mr. Chair and members, I'll give you an initial answer here, and I might ask my colleagues here who are in the planning process to provide more in-depth details around their regional approaches. But part of the intent here is to really be leveraging existing funding streams to provide the services within these facilities, so whether that's MA or supportive housing dollars, et cetera. In terms of kind of the specific sustainability plans, I'd certainly invite my colleagues, if they have are able to expand upon that for their regions.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, you hit the nail on the head.
Identify yourself. Please identify yourself again.
I'm Erin Metzger with St. Luke's Hospital. So that's some of the conversation that we're working with right now within our planning committees is building a building is all great, but you have to sustain these programs to keep them going for people that need them moving forward. So our discussions are looking at what services are billable through medical assistance, what things we can offer as far as like medication management, some of the intensive community case management, group therapy, those sorts of services that we could also offer at this place, but then also working on looking at how we can restructure our mobile crisis team to build more support in there, and there's funding for mobile crisis. And what's really going to come down the line is our relationship with DHS. There is going to have to be conversation about reimbursement. There's going to have to be conversation about what beds would look like and all of those things. So we're going to really need to partner with them, and we've had some fairly good conversations with them thus far. So we really look forward to kind of working on those sorts of things.
Thank you.
Thank you. In other words, once if this were to be established in these crisis centers built, I wouldn't expect that you'd be coming back to the Capital Investment Committee for future funding. Operations would be funded by some other means.
We're exploring, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we're exploring those options, whether we've talked about some philanthropic push within the community, but knowing that we have to come up with something to meet the state investment as well.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Miller, to answer another one of your questions about prioritization, I have signed on to this bill.
Okay. I didn't like one of your bills, Mr. Chair.
Just one. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the line of talk here has kind of answered somewhat of my questions, but I want to make sure I understand. And first, Representative Albright, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. This is huge. The system that we have right now to provide mental care is broken, and we all know that. And I think this is a good stab at starting to fix that. My question is, and I know with bonding, we can't bond for the programming, only for the brick and mortar. Is that correct? So these projects that would come forth, these for the competitive grants, would involve both brick and mortar and programming, but the bonding would only fund the brick and mortar portion. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to float some ideas for the other members. I've been in multiple stages of watching this develop in Olmsted County, where they've got a relatively robust and complete set of ideas that they're working with. One of the things that happens, and this sounds like that I'm a light bulb salesman in a little bit, but investing in a key place, it does generate benefits such that the costs start to become more available rather than continuing to go away from you. Just a couple of examples. In Rochester, and they said up in Duluth, they've got people that are social workers, counselors, that sort of thing, riding in the cars with the officers or going out on the call. So the call comes in as a guy, you know, under a bench out in the street. You've got a social worker who can immediately start addressing that issue at the moment, which most research would say the sooner and the more directly you are dealing with the crisis part of it for mental illness, the less you're going to use going upstream from that. Also, if you just use the normal, I think it was, I had to step out, and I'm sorry, Mr. Albright, but the key is also right now we are absorbing money by putting them in a hospital bed, thousands of dollars a day. Then we're also absorbing a chunk of money by putting them in a jail cell, thousands of dollars a day. So what's happening is there is aggregate expense by the inadequacy of not having something that can step up and assist these people at that moment of crisis. So that in itself, I think, gives us reason to try to work on these. Then another area that I think I see benefit here that's available is for that benefit to accrue out to other people that are dealing with this, other police forces, other hospitals, and that sort of thing. We'll start to see ideas in how to maybe maximize their services and be able to cut down on the wasted money that is caused when people are just put up for bed and board for a few days because the system runs out. I think that I know the Rochester Police Department would testify quickly that the fact that they can do this is lowering that overhead cost in their system rather than allowing it to continue to transpire.
Could we kind of wind her up, please?
I'm sorry. I'll just leave it at that.
All right, thank you. We've got two more folks on the list, and if we could be a little concise with our comment and question, that would be appreciated because we still have four more bills. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, was that a message to me because of my history? Or
I knew you would be. That was for Representative Lilly.
I'm going to
talk longer than
I do have a tendency to have long questions sometimes. But, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure who to pose this question to, but a few years ago I was on a conference committee dealing with the building of a new hospital in Maple Grove, and we don't build hospitals very often, but a very big part of the discussion at the time was the number of beds that would be devoted to mental health needs in that new hospital. And so my question is, and I'll try to be concise with it, with these crisis centers and the discussion about a continuum of care, will the beds in those crisis centers then give some relief to the need for hospital beds? Because that Maple Grove hospital just kind of scratched the surface in terms of what we were told the need was at the time. So I don't know who best to answer that question. When I first wrote down my question, it was Commissioner McDonough, because he had so many different roles. I thought maybe he'd have a pretty good picture of the overall need and what the impact would be, for example, in regions and what the need would be with the crisis centers and all of that.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner McDonough.
Yep. Representative Carlson, thank you for that question. I wish we were at a point where I could tell you if we made these investments, we wouldn't need as many beds in their jails and hospital beds. But the backflow and the bottleneck is so extreme that these beds are so critical to moving us forward for the right reasons. But right now at Regions, they invested in 100 beds. I don't know how many Maple Grove ended up doing, but we got 100 at Regions. They are full every single day. In the emergency room, there are folks that are sitting there 3 days, 4 days to get into one of those beds where at Regions, we've created a special spot in the emergency room, which is basically a emergency room for folks coming in with mental health issues. So this is going to bring relief to the system, and it's going to provide the right opportunities for a response in the right environment. But my best guess right now, those beds that they free up, there are people that will be moving in. The investments we need to make, as I mentioned earlier, this is a good start, but we've got a long ways to go. We're so behind in mental health investments compared to what we invest in the physical health of our people. And it's individuals' well-being, right? We segmented it, and we support physical health, and the response in that has been a lot more comprehensive over the last 100 years than the investment we've made in the mental well-being of individuals in our community.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Albright. I think this is one of the best bills I've seen all year, and thank you for bringing it forward. My question is this. I'm just wondering if we could hear just a brief comment from, like, NAMI or any of the groups. But I know we're under time pressure, but it would just be interested to hear a couple sentences of how they feel about it. And I'm sure it's going to be favorable. But.
And Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, Sue Abderholden from NAMI is present.
Well, welcome. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And actually, in the past, we have had concerns with this bill and other bills like it. But with the amendment, we're feeling much better about it and are supportive. In the past, what you really looked at was what was called central receiving centers, duplicating what Texas and Florida did, which are ranked 49 and 50 out of funding for community mental health. So not exactly states that we would go to learn how to do it better. And one of the problems in, with the central receiving centers is we made it easy for police but not for the individuals. And with the language changes in the amendment, what we're making it is easy for the individual to access mental health treatment, which is what we want. And they have to provide treatment, which means you can bill for it and it's more sustainable than just getting assessed and referred out to services that don't exist and you've created a, you know, new shiny revolving door. So the amendments that have been made are good. We think that this is a good way forward. We have a lot of people that go to the emergency room. They don't need hospital level of care, but they need something. And for these crisis homes, this will be that something that people need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Conclusion, Representative Albright.
Brevity is my best friend, Mr. Chair.
Then you've got a lot of friends. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I have so much more.
The next, next bill before us is House File 3004. Representative Drew Christensen, welcome back from your national media tour.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you don't have to move it or anything. Just proceed, please.
All right, perfect. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to have this bill heard in the Capital Investment Committee. House File 3004 is a critical bill in the same vein as the last bill to build the add mental health beds in Savage, a facility. And here to talk a little more about the specifics of the project is Robin Selvig, who very importantly was my childhood neighbor growing up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome.
Thank you for this opportunity. I just have to clarify, my name is Pam Selvig. Sorry, there is a Robin Selvig also that's involved in Scott County as well. But thank you for this opportunity. I am actually the Health and Human Services Director with Scott County.
Did you know him growing up? That's what
Mr. Chair, yes, I did. We lived kind of across the street, so it has been some years, though. He was about 10 when I last saw him.
Mr. Chair, I'm batting 666, two-thirds of the way, right?
Right. Proceed.
Anyways, thank you again. I'm here today to support House File 3004, a bill seeking $1.4 million in state bonding funds for the construction of a 16-bed mental health facility in Scott County. The state funds would actually match county and nonprofit funds for the development of a proposed $2.8 million facility. The planned 16-bed program would include both short-term crisis residential beds, which you heard a little bit about earlier, and longer-term intensive residential treatment services. The hope for this bonding request is to fill a gap in the continuum of mental health services for Scott County and surrounding communities. Scott County has seen a 90% increase in the utilization of short-term crisis beds from 2012 to 2016. The extreme shortage of beds for patients has resulted in some people sitting in emergency rooms for long hours or days as they wait for an appropriate placement. Due to the shortage of nearby services, patients are frequently sent long distances. Sometimes the only beds are in facilities as far away as Fargo or Duluth. This results in removing patients from their community and their support network. Patients being treated at Anoka can also find themselves without appropriate facilities when they no longer meet the hospital level of care. Often these patients would still benefit from additional treatment in a supportive environment. Scott County has seen a 100% increase in the number of clients requiring intensive residential treatment services from 2012 to 2016, and we lack any of those services in our community. A facility such as the one proposed in Scott County would allow for more timely, appropriate, and cost-effective services for the patient. Scott County has been working with Guild Incorporated, a private mental health provider, since 2016 around this potential development in the region. The facility would provide an intermediate care setting with capacity to support those living in the community who need help to stabilize their symptoms and address the immediate need without hospital care. The program would also offer treatment and support for those transitioning from hospital level of care. We have the support of neighboring counties, our local hospital, our local mental health advisory, and providers in the community. The barrier to the development of this much-needed service has been the initial capital costs. We hope that you would please consider the support of House File 3004, as this funding would fill a significant gap in the continuum of mental health services for Scott County and our surrounding communities.
Mr. Chair, we also have the mayor of Savage, Janet Williams, to testify in support.
Thank you. Representative Christensen, the mayor.
I'm Janet Williams. I'm also the Scott County NAMI affiliate chair, and I am the mayor of Savage.
Welcome to the committee.
Welcome, Mr. Chair. I'm here. I want to thank you for the opportunity to tell my family story. Our 51-year-old son lives with a serious and persistent mental illness, also called a biological brain disease. Statistics show that 1 in 5 people live with a mental illness. We had 3 sons. Our middle son, intelligent, outstanding athlete in hockey and soccer, an avid hunter and fisherman, loving, kind, nonviolent, never been in jail, but he lives with us. And if he didn't, I figured he'd be homeless. His goal is to take care of us. In his mid-20s, he came home from living in Georgia, and it was evident that something was wrong. He thought there were people in the house. He was hearing voices. He wouldn't leave the house. We knew he was not feeling right, and it was common for those living with such experiences to use alcohol or street drugs to self-medicate. We had no experience with mental illness and were relieved to learn about county services. A psychiatrist from the county and a case manager came to the house and diagnosed him with paranoid schizophrenia. Finally, after we took him to St. Francis Hospital in Shakopee, their protocol was to call the Scott Carver Crisis Team. So we waited for hours for them to come while he was housed in what looked like a cell as he was hearing voices. After they arrived and did an assessment, he was strapped to a gurney in his psychotic state and transferred to Brainerd, where there was an available bed. Our long journey began. St. Peter, Anoka, Cedar Riverside, North Memorial, St. Joe's, New Ulm, 2 commitments, a transition home in Mankato, another in Duluth, MRCI and ERTS. And with all of that, I can assure you that no one brought the hot dish. A wonderful counselor helped my husband and me to grieve the loss of the expectations that we thought were in his future and to accept him as he was. He led us to NAMI, and with that help, we learned that we needed to take care of ourselves to be of help to him. Through all of this, our son is a great son who has much to teach us. Yes, he does not like feeling whacked out on his meds, and he's discouraged when he loses its efficacy. I want to share a story about his 50th birthday party. He planned the menu. Sloppy Joe's that he prepared had a pinata and said on the invitations that he would have a keg of root beer, and if anybody else wanted anything stronger, it was bring your own bottle. After all, he is proud of his 12 years of sobriety. His invitation list was interesting. He only invited people who had been nice to him. His dad's golfing buddy, who had been nice to him, and who had sent him the only card that he received when he was in the hospital. One of several uncles he invited, 3 of his many cousins, a distant relative who talks to him, his godmother because she always remembers his birthday, and his brother, sister-in-law, and two nieces who love him unconditionally. This is an interesting message for all of us. Only invite those who've been nice to him. Most people don't know what to say or to do, and so they do nothing. And then there's in stigma. Then that's a whole other topic. Obviously, this proposal would provide crisis and ERTS in our community, which is something that is not available. Obviously, the mental health system is broken, but we'll never get up, give up hope, and we thank you for the time.
Thank you. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Christensen, for bringing this forward. I guess my question might be for the first testifier. My concern is that this possibly seems like too small of a facility, 16 beds. I'm not sure of the need, but then that would lead to the second question I would have following that up would be, then what would be the proposed length of stay, and then how would you transition the transitional process to get them to more stable care if this is just a temporary stay facility?
Ms. Selden.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'll do my best to try to answer your questions. Oftentimes 16 days, and I don't want to get too technical, but we run into federal issues for facilities more than 16 days. They become what's called IMDs or Institutes for Mental Disease, and then we have issues with Medicaid funding. So oftentimes we're looking at facilities less than 16 days. The facility that we're proposing would be for up to 90 days of treatment. And then we would really hope that we would have case managers working with the individuals there, looking for long-term, more supportive-type housing. And I apologize if I missed any part of that question.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I understand better now. I guess I would just reiterate, I think maybe at this point it's possibly too small of a facility for your needs.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up on that, the previous group, I don't know that they said it, but theirs also are limited to 16 beds per facility for precisely the two reasons that she gave. Bigger than that complicates things for a number. So the previous bill was the same size of 16 beds, but there's a practical reason for that limit.
Thank you.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Christensen. So is this in addition to the grant program? Because it seems like what you've put forward here is something that would actually fall within the purview of the last presenter. So I'm curious, are we kind of doing one that's not specific at this time, but you already have a specific project, so you're moving forward with yours right away?
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, there certainly are similarities with the last bill. There are, I believe, and Ms. Selden could go a little bit into the details. I believe the last bill had the short term, and ours would also have beds for a little bit longer term to the 90 days. In addition, this project is ready to go, so that is another difference. This one's ready to go.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up is House File 3155, Representative Smith.
Everyone wants one of these. The Hero Center.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3155 gives a unique opportunity for the expansion of a training facility in the northwest suburbs that encompasses 19 agencies, including the Secret Service, the FBI, and 17 cities and counties. And I have my mayor and the chief of police with me. Mr. Chair, I'd like to have them offer some testimony to this bill.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mark Stephenson. I'm the mayor of Maple Grove, and I'm pleased to be here today to talk about this North Metro Range bill. The North Metro Range was established back in about 1992 with two agencies, and since that time has expanded to include the 20 agencies, including the City of Maple Grove that Representative Smith mentioned. This facility houses and trains a lot of different agencies throughout the expanse, including the FBI, the DEA, U.S. Marshals, U.S. Secret Service, the Flight Marshals, the State Patrol, Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, and a number of different local community police departments such as New Hope, Champlin, Brooklyn Park, Rogers, Wayzata, and other communities in the northwest suburbs. It's truly a regional facility, and with all these different agencies and their demands for training, unfortunately, we reached our capacity and had to turn away other agencies that are looking to use the facility. That is the reason why we're here today, to look for essentially matching funds to expand our facility so that we can continue to service and provide the best services for our law enforcement community for their training. And that includes both range activities and other specialized training activities so that they are better trained in having to deal with situations that they encounter on a daily basis and know how to react to them and handle them in our communities as they're providing their services to our communities. And I'll turn over the rest of the specific comments to our Chief Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Eric Warner. I'm the Chief of Police for the City of Maple Grove. And just to build on the comments that the mayor said, we have run a very successful training facility for 25 years, which we think is a model for a regional facility. The requested funding provides for the needed expansion of the Metro Range to not only increase the demand for the training space, but also to modernize the training capabilities for a more realistic scenario-based training environment. And we also want to allow for a redundancy of our facility operations. With so many entities that are relying on us, we have to make sure that we can continue to provide that service. Also, personnel utilizing the facility, if it were to be expanded, what we're trying to do, will return to their communities with the highest level of training to meet the challenges and the threats they face in a 21st century environment. I think it's also important to note that the North Metro Range Regional Public Safety Training Facility currently meets four of the five criteria provided in two state-level reports for evaluating facility siting, ownership, and operation when considering potential capital funding requests. The one remaining criteria is not applicable because that deals with mobile type training capabilities. So finally, we know that our facility is a proven model, as I said before, in providing high-quality public safety training, also in a cost-efficient manner. And it's worthy of investment to continue to allow us to provide this level of training to the personnel in the region that keep the community safe. And not only is it for all the partners that the mayor spoke of, but it allows all of these partners to interact. We develop strong relationships. We understand each other. And I believe it also builds on our readiness to deal with whatever challenges or threats we face. So thank you for your opportunity.
Thank you. Chief Warner, do you know how many training facilities there are in the state?
I know that there are a number throughout the state, but when I take a look at what our facility is, we're the only one in our area, and we're at capacity as well as some of the others in our area.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a question. A few years ago, we built a training facility in Brooklyn Park. It's co-located on the Hennepin Technical College campus. And how does the mission of the one that you're operating mesh with the one in Brooklyn Park? This is a follow-up to his question as to how many there are in the area, and I think we spent something like $12-16 million for that facility that's in Brooklyn Park, but I don't know if the missions are quite a bit different from the mission of your training facility.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, that facility is focused on the post-secondary education when it is regard to law enforcement. Ours is focused on providing an environment specifically for public safety personnel that are in the field as we speak. So theirs is more education, and they don't have the capacity that we have.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, yours is more, well, I guess when you say in the field, it's more a continuing education type program where the other is preparing officers to go into the field. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Theirs is to prepare them. Our, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Ours is to provide that base level of training that we need, for example, with the post board requirements, and then enhancing that to a more realistic environment, not only what we're seeing in the field, but as things are emerging, such as crisis intervention type training, integrating that into the training, de-escalation, or whatever terrorism or emergency management type threats we would receive, training based on that.
And Mr. Chairman, I was just trying to see how the two facilities interact, because it is close, but if it's got a different mission, that's a different question. Thank you.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question is for Mayor Stephenson, Your Honor. Maple Grove built this in the beginning, and I kind of remember that. You financed it through the city and with your own funding and things. It was essentially a police range at that time. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative McClellan, we originally built it in conjunction with the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department. The two agencies have essentially used the facility throughout the 25 years. So a few years ago, we had a fire, and the facility was rebuilt at that time. And since that time, essentially most of these agencies have now come to our facility because they don't have the similar training facilities in their communities or available to them, and that's how we've now ended up with 20 different agencies at our location.
Representative Uglum.
Mr. Mayor, I know, and in fact, our city of Champlin and many of the surrounding cities train there with firearms and so on and so forth. Could you give me some kind of idea, or maybe Chief, you would have the answer to that, how many law enforcement people, personnel, use this facility on an annual basis? It has to be huge.
Chief Werner.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, the four main agencies, and I can use Maple Grove, Plymouth, Brooklyn Park, and the Sheriff's Office. If you look at that, that's at least about 500 to 600 personnel are using it before you build in all the other partners and the post-secondary education organizations. So there's a tremendous amount of people using the facility.
Mr. Chair, yeah, my point is it's a very, very important regional facility for any law enforcement in the North Metro, and I know that it's packed. I mean, it's literally bursting at the seams, and that's what my cops tell me, too. It provides a very, very necessary facility for all law enforcement throughout the Metro, actually. Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're looking at least two proposals today, one in the South Metro for Dakota County, it looks like, and then this proposal that does the same thing, it looks like, training. What do we know, I guess, in terms of how many are needed? What would be the size of the population base that you serve? Is it two for the 3 million person metro area, or do we know?
Well,
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck, I think that when you look at who the agencies are that are involved, we know that for the North Metro range, essentially we are serving certainly well in excess of a quarter of the population, probably the state of Minnesota. When you talk about the entire Hennepin County Sheriff's Department and then the other federal agencies and then the various local agencies in the North Metro area. It's a very significant range, and it's why we need this range to be expanded, is because additional adjoining agencies in the North Metro area have been seeking us out to use this facility, and if we can expand it, we know we can provide those opportunities that don't exist for them and their communities. I think that that's one of the problems with the existing small ranges in some of these communities, is that they really aren't state-of-the-art. And we have a state-of-the-art facility that essentially everything is recycled, everything is caught, everything is done. It's a fascinating operation, but I think it's one of those things where the agencies know that this provides them the best level of training, and so they were looking forward to this expansion as well.
Well, thank you.
Where was that run back?
Mr. Chair, so, I mean, my only concern is, overbuilding, and sounds like people are understanding that there's, high grade, high quality, large facility, and hopefully we don't fall into the trap of overbuilding. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For the chief there, this facility, you said it offers more advanced training as well. Could you expound on that a little bit? Because firearms training is one thing. You said there's more realistic scenarios that you go through.
Chief Warner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grassholt, currently the facility we have has 12 40-yard firing ranges, so that deals with the firearms aspect of it. We also have a training room off to the side that has essentially the virtual training environment where you can run and adjust scenarios as they go. And then we have a large training room where we can bring in the classroom aspect of it. And what we're finding is that when you're trying to do the realistic aspect of it, you're setting things up on the range and trying to make do, for example, like a room search or something like that, and you're doing it with somewhat movable but ad hoc materials. So this facility that we're proposing will take what we think is a state-of-the-art facility, but bring that modern technology now that we've been operating for 25 years.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Grassel.
Reason I'm asking is because, you know, I know how important, former law enforcement myself, I know how important it is for that realistic type training in order to be able to serve your communities better. We were fortunate for our federal task force to get sent to Quantico for officer survival training. And is this something that you're going to try to build more into as far as adding more to your training system for the regional departments? And, again, is it something that outstate officers could come to your facility as well? I guess I don't know if it reaches that far yet.
Chief Warren.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the proposed build that we would like to do includes additional range space. Also, it includes a large portion of simunition locations. So now you're getting into the training that you have spoken to. I am a graduate of FBI National Academy, so I've been out at Quantico. I know what you're talking about.
And excellent facility there.
That's a fantastic facility out there. And I think that's what we're trying to do with the regional facility is how can we make these training environments as real as possible. We have our tactics, our firearms, but bring in the concepts of de-escalation, bring in the mental health training, and bring it all into a room where we can say we have real scenarios, and that's what's going to better prepare all of us when we're facing real-life situations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not so sure if it's you, Mr. Mayor, or the Chief, or even you, Representative Smith. So I'm looking at these 20 agencies, and I know that many of them are sort of local cities or counties and folks like that. But then when I see FBI, DEA, U.S. Secret Service, I mean, do they participate in the creation? Do they pay a fee? I'm trying to understand what the sort of the business model is of how this facility actually works. If you could explain that for me, that would be great.
Chief Warner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, there's a couple arrangements within the business model. So we do run an operations budget, and through the fees that we receive from the users, we are paying for our operational costs. We have what's called members. So we have joint powers agreements with certain members, and then we also have service agreement. So it's based on an hourly fee and based on what they believe their hourly use would be at the facility. And then, for example, with the Rasmussen, we have a joint powers agreement with that organization, and that allows them to lock the time down and book their time. So in general, it's joint powers agreements and service agreements. In addition to the public use, we do get some revenue through public use as well.
Okay. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on Representative Rundick's question, how much do we really need? And I don't know if any of you remember back Representative Paymar. When Representative Paymar was here, there was a study done, and I was looking in the audience. I don't see any department people who might have the answer to try to answer what you asked, what is our need. And they actually completed their study, and there's a map, and they were they spread it geographically. I don't know if that exists. I don't see any department person in the audience who might let us know whether that is still available, but it's a point of reference, I think, for all three of the projects we're hearing today.
As I recall, in those days, the mood was to consolidate as much as possible. I think, like Camp Ripley would be one. And actually, I think they were trying to get almost everybody to go to Camp Ripley at one time.
And, Mr. Chair, what I recall is the motivation for it was sort of like today, everyone wanted one, and so we can't afford that. So you do the study to say, well, how can we serve everyone? And so that was the idea of locating them regionally. So I don't know whether that still informs us today or not, but at any rate, it's somewhere on a shelf.
We never did get that shoot house fixed up in Annandale.
Oh, darn.
Who do I have next? Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chief or Mr. Mayor. I like this proposal. I like consolidating and seeing all the partners. My question is on an environmental issue on this. Is there a lead collection and recycling system? Because you run a lot of people through there, for the population area, I think that'd be a concern.
I think that it's a very
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. I think it's a very interesting design system that they have. It's for the lack of a better word, it's a decreasing funnel tube system. So in other words, you shoot downrange, you hit this sort of steel tube that spins the bullet, and as the bullet then slows down because of the spinning in the system, it at some point will simply drop into a series of collection bins. So every single bullet that is shot downrange is collected into a series of bins, which then we go ahead and recycle these bins as they fill up. So every single shot is recycled through the process, so there is no disposal of this shot into the system. It's simply recycled and reused as a part of the system.
Thank you. We were just about ready to move on, Representative Carlson, but we'll let you...
Mr. Chairman... looking at the list that was handed out, it says New Hope Police Department, and then in parentheses it says member. And it's the only one on the list that says member. I just wanted to know, as the one who represents New Hope, what that means.
Chief Warner.
Quick answer.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative, actually the top three are members, so we own it, and then Plymouth and Brooklyn Park are considered members. New Hope has a member-type arrangement, but that agreement is just a little bit different than the ones we have with Plymouth and Brooklyn Park.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the reason I was asking is I didn't know if they underwrote part of the cost or something as being a member, whatever that meant. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Smith, any closing comment?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Now House File 2965, Representative Juergens. Welcome, gentlemen. Representative Juergens, Representative Franke. Representative Juergens, begin the presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I would like to say I don't think I've ever felt safer in this building than I do today with all this law enforcement here. We're here to talk about the East Metro Training Center, the HERO Center. This is a joint agreement between the city of Cottage Grove and the city of Woodbury. I'm going to let the testifiers give you most of the details. Those of you that were on the bonding tour last year, we visited the site, the location of this. Representative and Frankie and I discussed who got to carry this bill, and since the proposed location is about two blocks from my house, I won. This concept or this HERO Center has been discussed since at least 2011. Prior to coming to the legislature, I was a member of the Cottage Grove Economic Development Authority, and I chaired the Public Services Committee Commission. And with both of those, this has been a topic of a conversation for a number of years. As you'll hear in the testimony, the legislature in 2015 did provide $1.45 million in planning and design. This project truly is shovel-ready. They're ready to go. If we receive the bonding, as soon as the bonds are sold, they'll be ready to be moving dirt in summer or fall at the latest. So we've got testifying here from the city of Woodbury, the Director of Public Safety, Lee Begg. We have Mayor Myron Bailey from Cottage Grove and Police Captain Greg Renzel from Cottage Grove. And I believe Mayor Bailey is going to go first.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to go. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. I am Mayor Myron Bailey from the City of Cottage Grove, and I want to thank you all for allowing me to testify today on the importance and the need of the East Metro Regional Training Facility, or better known to many as the Hero Center. The state of Minnesota has already partnered with the Hero Center by providing previous funding that has allowed the cities of Cottage Grove and Woodbury to design a facility that will meet the regional needs. The East Metro Regional Training Facility was given bonding money for pre-design and engineering money in 2015. As Representative Jurgens mentioned, $1.45 million to make this project shovel-ready. And I do want to personally thank Chairperson Erdahl and Representative Hosman, both of you and the rest of the legislature for providing that funding back in 2015. The East Metro Regional Training Facility is, as mentioned, truly shovel-ready. We could bid this project this coming July in 2018 and begin construction later this fall if we are awarded the construction dollars. The East Metro Regional Training Facility has been a very long public process. Both city councils of Woodbury and Cottage Grove have supported this project because we recognize the need and importance of improving training for our firefighters, EMS, and police officers. And I would mention that, interesting, we heard about Maple Grove earlier, there is no compatible or comparable facility in the East Metro. This facility will create opportunities for hosting community-based safety education and training programs such as CPR, firearm safety, and also will have an indoor shooting range that will be open to the public. As an elected official for the City of Cottage Grove, I want to ensure that our first responders are well-trained and have the same opportunities for training that other officers in the rest of the Metro have. The HERO, or East Metro Regional Training Facility, will address a very important need for the entire region, and I hope the state will partner with our communities to ensure that the East Metro has the same access and opportunity for training of our public safety personnel as other communities do. And so I think what I'm going to do is I might just turn it over to the Director of Public Safety for the City of Woodbury, Lee Begg.
Welcome, Mr. Begg. Begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Representative Hausman spoke just moments ago about two studies that the Department of Public Safety has done, both in 1999 and 2009, that both clearly indicated the need for a regional training facility, public safety training facility in the East Metro. If I could ask you to look at the cover of the handout we just gave you, it does provide a map to show you that there is definitely a need in our area on the East Metro. As the mayor said, we have no dedicated training facility. And so this is something that the cities of Cottage Grove identified along with the state. And for about the last 8 years, we have been working together. Yeah. We know that the right way to do this is for local cities to partner with you, the state. It has to be a regional effort. And so I thank you also for your investment in this project, and we've put that money to good use. We have a completed design now for over 47,000 square feet of dedicated training space. And this is a multi-use space that will be useful for law enforcement, also for our emergency medical responders and fire responders. So when I think about how training has changed and how things, even in our 8 years of studying this and in planning this, I think there is an elevated need now, and I think the timing of this is really right. When I look around and see even some of the other discussions that are happening and some of the lively debate dealing with active shooter incidents and school safety, I think this really addresses the need for our police officers and our first responders, all these different disciplines, to be able to have a place to train together. It's the day we hope never comes. It's that worst possible day, but to make that day a little better, and I think that's where life-saving can really take place. So I would ask you to consider this. We appreciate your time in considering this project, and I also would like to ask for some testimony from Captain Greg Renzel. He can give you some details on what's unique about this facility and how these different spaces work together. I thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chief. Well, Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Good afternoon. Greg Rinzel. I'm a police captain with the city of Cottage Grove.
Last name again, please.
Rinzel. Sorry, Rinzel.
Okay, thank you.
Just want to take a real quick moment to talk about the facility and what it looks like. On the handouts also, there's an insert within that that lays out the building and how it's designed and implemented for training. This is something that Commander Chris Meidert and I from Woodbury Police Department have been working on for many years, since 2011, to try to establish and design a facility that meets the needs of the local area, the region, the entire state, and really nationally known as an excellent center for training first responders. The center is laid out in different pods of training. So like any good training facility or any training, as you heard from the chief from Maple Grove, you want to do state-of-the-art. You want to be able to have a training facility that starts with one thing and ends with another. In other words, if you're doing training from beginning to end, you don't want to just do classroom and then end it. You want to be able to do classroom. You want to then take it into a practical application. You want to test the skills of the person that's now had those practical applications. And then you want to end it with the scenario-based training to establish that what they've learned throughout the day is truly the best practices in the United States. That's what this facility has to offer. You'll notice the different pods that are set up. So it can not only be used by a single agency on all different facets, but it can also be used by multiple agencies at the same time, together working in conjunction with one another. And what I mean by that is we could have four or five different departments all training within this facility at the exact same time, moving into different pods or different areas of training, all concentrating on a specific task. So the building is laid out in that manner. There's also an outside training where two buildings appear to be residential structures, your houses, so the officer would drive up just like they would respond to a domestic situation or any other type of incident that's occurred, and be able to handle that from beginning to end. So the facility is truly, in our opinion, best type build, just like you see all throughout the nation. We really looked at this as something for the region to be able to kind of showcase our abilities to train as groups. Woodbury and Cottage Grove both run public safety departments, which is police, fire, and EMS all under one umbrella. So we have, we've already broken those silos. We don't come and respond as single users. We work hand in hand with the EMS and firefighters. A lot of our police officers are also paramedics. In Woodbury, they're also firefighters. So we're all under one umbrella and one team, and to work in relationship together to handle an incident is really an integral part of law enforcement and emergency response training.
Thank you. Captain Rizzell, a question I probably should have asked Maple Grove as well. How many days in a year do you expect that you would be open for training?
Mr. Chair, that was part of our business model, and it's not a secret. We went to both the South Metro, which is in Bloomington, and North Metro and stole their business plans. We looked at what they're doing. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel, and the reason that we started with the center where we are now is we went to those facilities to try to use those facilities, and they are truly out of space. There is no room for their extra officers to be able to train there. So when we wrote the business model, we think of ourselves as kind of a Monday through Friday training facility. Weekends we're trying to have open to the public for DNR hunter safety, open for the public for range use. As you know, any bill or any cash that is given to communities has to be open to the public for ranges, and we have that built into our facility and use.
Thank you. And we don't talk about stealing things here. It's more like modeling after.
We reallocated their services.
Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Juergens, I don't recall from our visit when we were there this past summer. This is asking for almost $10 million. Was there an amount that the municipalities and the county were putting into this project? What's the total cost of the project?
Yes, roughly the same amount divided between the city of Woodbury and the city of Cottage Grove.
Thank you.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain, so you mentioned that currently that you've been going to South Metro, North Metro, things like that. How does that those travel times impact your personnel costs, your staffing, overtime, and things like that? I mean, do you have any handle on what kind of savings you would have with having this facility in your own backyard?
Captain.
Thank you. It's a great question. That's something that we've wrestled with. As you know, traveling on 494, 694 loop during any time where vehicles are moving for rush hour becomes almost impossible. We did some studies early on, and we looked at like a 30-year recapture. And just for personnel costs, we're over $1 million in personnel costs just for travel in a short period of time. And that was Cottage Grove's costs. Woodbury is on top of that. So you're looking at an extensive amount of money and time that is being used on the highways driving back and forth to a facility that isn't really near us.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Representative Dean wanted to ask this, but I do like your question and the line of thinking there. That, I mean, you had a business model with a lot of people buying in and so on in North Metro. So you're just talking two cities. So, I mean, do you see the same sort of model of serving all of the cities in the East Metro?
Chief?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the question. We would have a similar model, and we are looking at, a very different geographical area. So similarly, we would have member agencies. The very first member agency that we're speaking with is the Sheriff's Office, Washington County Sheriff's Office in the area, large agency. We are confident that in the East Metro area, the police agencies and Sheriff Department that we work with every single day has the same needs that the cities of Cottage Grove and the cities of Woodbury have. So this is very much a regional facility, and as we did our setting looking at both the South Metro and North Metro, it just made us even more confident that we know there's a lot of people that need a facility and are dealing with the same travel issues that we just covered with Representative's question. So we want to be leaders in this area, and we think that these two cities are in a good position to do that, but we also want to make it clear to this committee that this is very much a regional center and that we would be looking forward to many membership agencies and working in a very similar way that you heard earlier testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so maybe it doesn't need to be asked, but so if we have somebody from Forest Lake, for example, wanting to develop a service center, similarly, we'd say, nope, you got one down there in South Metro. I hopefully that would be the case.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, that was basically my question. Are you going to be in the Northeast Metro? What are the plans there for a training center? And or would they be able to conduct training at the center, the Hero Center?
Chief or Captain, whichever.
I could take that. Thank you for your question.
Captain Renzel.
Yes. Yeah. The center is being built for capacity, just like you heard the Maple Grove chief talk about. It originally started with two member agencies that got together knowing there was a need, and that was quickly filled with other agencies, and now they're overfilled. So the center itself, we feel very confident that 600 officers could train at that facility at any given time in the year. So with that capacity, we're more than comfortable that the East Metro and Northeast Metro would be covered within this facility if they choose to do the training here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Juergens, Representative Franke, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just, to kind of follow up a little bit on Representative Brumbeck's question, there has been expressed interest by other communities in our area to train at this facility, just pending, you know, the availability and how fast it's going to fill up and who's going to take the primary slots and roles. So there's definitely a need out there within our areas tenfold, I would say. I would just like members to remember we're shovel-ready. This is multifaceted, multi-use. It covers broad spectrums of public safety, not only the police but also the fire and EMS in our area, from beginning to end training and also potentially mass casualty trainings also. So there is that possibility too. So the center is just hopefully, just want to get your support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? Just in conclusion, I just want to say that this project has bicameral support, and it has bipartisan support, and it has local support with the cities of Cottage Grove and Hastings as well. And I would just thank you for your time today, and thank you for your consideration of this project.
Thank you very much. We have one more bill before us, House File 2922, Representative Barr.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl, and in keeping
welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and in keeping with being a first-time presenter in front of your committee, I did bring treats.
I was wondering about that.
Yes, I would not.
And Representative Atkins does not count as a treat.
I am not.
I know Commissioner Atkins does not count as a treat.
I would agree, although I do have respect for Commissioner Atkins.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity and members to present to you today. And I'm really delighted to bring this project forward. It's the Dakota County SMART Regional Training Center Bonding Initiative. And SMART, I want to point out, stands for Safety and Mental Health Alternative Response Training. This facility brings together a number of important activities that will support public safety operations in our region. Among other things, it will provide a home for crisis intervention training in our area. I think that we can all agree that the need for this training has become increasingly obvious. We mandated this training for all law enforcement officers last sessions, and we agreed to fund it because this legislature believes that it is what law enforcement needs to improve our response to mental health crises and public safety throughout the region. This is the number one legislative priority for Dakota County this year, and it is critically important to public health and public safety opportunities in our entire region. I also want to say that this is not a partisan issue. We voted to support crisis intervention training for our public safety officers so that they could better deal with people in a mental health crisis and keep our communities safe. We have a number of groups and individuals that support this request. And, Mr. Chair, I would like to ask Dakota County Commissioner Joe Atkins, who many of you already know, to make some introductions.
Thank you, Representative Barr.
Commissioner Atkins, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, it's good to be back. I self-imposed a year-long absence, but I'm back. And it's nice. It's genuinely nice to see you again.
We are excited and thrilled.
You were excited to have me be gone for a year, right? I appreciate the opportunity to, first off, I appreciate Representative Barr carrying this bill. I appreciate your consideration of this. This may be the most important bonding project that I've ever been associated with. And I've been, as Representative Houseman knows, we've had some good stuff. This one, though, I give Commissioner Holberg, former Representative Holberg, the credit. She talked about this takes the very best practices of public health, combines them with the very best practices of public safety to deal with mental health and mental illness crises that our law enforcement folks are dealing with. That's to develop those soft skills. That's what sets this project apart so dramatically from anything else you've ever seen. I want to point out that we've got Chiefs McCarthy, Shaver, and Mesrick from Mendota Heights, South St. Paul, and West St. Paul here, as well as Chief Shaver from Hastings sends his regards. Law enforcement is very, very supportive of this proposal. It is, as Representative Barr said, our number one priority in Dakota County. And we have a brief video to share, and I promise you it's brief, that demonstrates what the SMART Center does that is so critically important to address mental illness crises in our community and support law enforcement when they encounter one of these crucial sorts of situations. So with that, Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you, I'd like to share the video.
Commissioner Atkins, how long is it?
Very brief.
Do I have time to eat my cupcake?
You have time to eat two cupcakes, Mr. Right, Chairman, because you're the chairman. I think it's under 3 minutes. I can hear the sound, and it is excellent, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. please enjoy your cupcakes while we resolve our technical issue.
Friends and families. My family is no different. My father was institutionalized after he came back from the Korean War, and I lived through that a little bit. He was in and out of my life a lot, but he was not a bad person. You just had to find a place where you could communicate with him.
We're all seeing a tremendous uptick in the number of calls we get with respect to mental illness or people in crisis.
You need to have a really good understanding of how to approach people that are suffering mental illness, and then how to help them get through their crisis.
Probably about one third of the officers in Minnesota have been trained at this point. That would be trained in a 40-hour CIT class. I would say you've probably got a half that have been trained 8 hours, kind of an awareness of what the issues or concerns are.
A lot of the push for crisis de-escalation training, crisis intervention team training, has come about because of the tragedy that someone with a serious mental illness in the middle of a mental health crisis was killed. And we don't want to see those tragedies occur. And we think many of them actually can be avoided if, again, people get the right training.
The Smart Center will be a venue where police officers and sheriff's deputies across the state receive crisis intervention training and practice their skills in realistic scenarios. Training officers to de-escalate incidents involving people with mental illness increases the safety of officers and the safety of the public.
Presently, we are going to wherever we can find space to train.
The reason that NAMI supports the Smart Center is we want to make sure that police training around mental illness is easily accessible. Having a place to go will make it easily accessible.
It's a 7-county metro accessible location where everyone could come, even the South Metro, Goodhue, Scott, and Carver, and all the way down to Olmsted County could make the trip up. It's a natural progression that law enforcement would be up to the challenge. We always accept the challenge that society gives us. Miranda, tape recording interviews, we've stepped up to the challenge on those. We can step up to this challenge as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to...
Jeff Barr.
I think like most people...
I'd like to turn things over to Dakota County Chief Deputy Joe Lecco.
Deputy Lecco.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. Joe Lecco, I'm Chief Deputy with Dakota County Sheriff's Office. Thank you for your time this afternoon. As you just saw in that video, our world is changing, the profession is changing, and we must change with it. The demands that are placed on law enforcement and first responders and that the rest of the state is facing with the increased number of calls of people in crisis and mental illness. So in order to meet these challenges, we have found it to be critical to train our first responders with the skills and the tools to be effective, and that includes the soft training skills that we talked about and you've heard earlier today. Traditional police training revolves around training with those tools that are on your belt. We still need to train on those tools. We also need to realize that there are other options as well, and we have to make sure that our officers and first responders are equipped with those tools. And through the CIT training, we're able to obtain that. And legislature acknowledged the importance of new training for peace officers last year, as you know, by requiring crisis intervention training. Law enforcement and first responders also acknowledge that training in the region and the statewide, and you can see by the list of partners on the handout on the back and supporters that they also recognize the need for this training. Last year, we at Dakota County Sheriff's Office, we sent over half of our licensed peace officers through the training, our deputies, the 40-hour training week through CIT, and it has translated into some success stories. I'll share a brief one with you. that occurred last November where a deputy responded to a call with a man who was in crisis. He wanted to commit suicide. His wife was in the basement with him and tried to take the gun from him that he intended to use on himself. When deputies arrived, they're able to locate them in the basement in a fortified room, basically, and were able, the one deputy that responded just completed this 40-hour training through CIT months prior, and a very good communicator, and was able to speak with the male and have him eventually release his wife so she was safe. The man still intended to hurt himself at that point. It was no longer a hostage situation. But through that continued dialogue and rapport that officer, that deputy acquired through this training, he was able to develop that rapport with him and convince him to put the gun down where we could have him come out and bring him to eventually to help. So that's just a great example of how this, that could have really went bad without the interpersonal skills and the training that was obtained through this course. So we believe in CIT training. We're responding to the legislature's training requirements with the Regional Smart Center. This is a unique public safety facility because the impetus of this project is the desire to provide a regional home for Minnesota CIT to conduct its training and give first responders the tools and to safely and effectively resolve calls for crisis. So we're excited to be a partner with CIT, Minnesota CIT, and to have the support of not just regional first responders and law enforcement agencies, but also leaders in the mental health awareness community, including NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. Sue Abderholden, as you heard from earlier, is here present with us and can probably offer any comments or questions later on if you have any with that. And I'll now turn it over to Mike Peterson, who's the Executive Director of Minnesota CIT. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, Mr. Peterson. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Michael Peterson. I am a retired police officer. After retiring, I went back and got a degree in mental health. I'm a licensed therapist, and for 13 years I've been the executive director of the Minnesota CIT. And our goal has been for 13 years to train police officers, mental health professionals, first responders, on how to respond to crisis situations and develop a crisis intervention team so we can work together from the time we initially arrive on that call. Presently, as a nonprofit, we work out of our homes, our home offices. We store any of our supplies in a storage facility. And when a class is put on, we go to that host agency and we use their facility. So in February, we're in this location right here, providing training for the Capitol Security and the Minnesota State Patrol that's assigned to the Capitol. Next week, we'll be in Maple Grove providing that training. Each time we go somewhere, there's the possibility of presenters not knowing where we're going to be, for the attendees having a hard time figuring out where that class is going to be. And so this offers us an opportunity to have a permanent location where we can address not only the 40-hour need for a CIT program, and we can also address the ongoing need for continuing education and building those teams so we have a better response all in all. And I think you've heard testimony about the mandate of what's going to be required of police officers as we move forward. I don't think this training is ever going to stop. These are perishable skills if you're not practicing active listening, empathetic, understanding, compassion for people that are struggling with a crisis situation. Those skills don't go away, but they do need to be honed from time to time. So we've given that opportunity. We bring professional actors in to play those roles and challenge the officers on how to stay safe and keep the person who's struggling safe also. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like to provide some additional commentary. The Dakota County Board of Commissioners have a business plan, and I do believe that there's a handout in your packet. That was one of the very first questions that I asked is, once the facility is built, how are you actually going to pay for it ongoing? They have the local funding share already budgeted. They just need the $6 million bonding match. Matt Smith, Dakota County manager, is also with us this afternoon to help answer any further questions. I was here listening to some of the other bills that were being presented, and I was able to listen to some of the questions, and I wanted to just provide some comments. Representative Hausman, you mentioned a study from, I believe it was 1999, and Dakota County Sheriff Tim Leslie, who was really implemental in pulling together the project and all of the associated organizations that are supporting this, was actually at the Department of Public Safety and was implemental in actually putting together that report. And so he followed and used that as a template for actually putting together this project. Representative Rumbeck, you had asked some questions of some of the other presenters. And one of the things that I'd like to point out is I really do believe that this has a unique focus in terms of its focus on that interpersonal sort of, if you will, the soft skills that so often get overlooked versus some of the hard skills training that we've heard today. And then, you know, Representative Detmer, earlier you had talked about whether or not other areas would be able to utilize this training. So in addition to the organizations that are outlined in your packet, there's already been other requests from other counties to see if they could actually use this facility. So I really feel that it's, you know, not only a regional asset, but would also be a state asset as well. So with that, I'll just say that I think each of us know how important it is for our communities and public safety to respond well and excellent, actually, when it comes to the mental health crisis that we're facing, and I believe that the Smart Center can help us do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and I do think in light of other testimony and bills we've had today, you know, with the crisis centers and such, that this dovetails well, you know, training for mental health issues. Mr. Smith, did you have something to add?
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to try to answer any question. I think the presenters have done a great job of laying out the proposal. We have a number of materials that have been provided as well.
Okay, thank you. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not so sure who the person that would answer this. I think it's great that we're looking at a facility for crisis intervention training. My concern, or something that hasn't really been talked about, it appears that one-third of the square footage is for the Dakota County Drug Task Force. So if someone could sort of address that and what that role is there any cross sort of synergy that happens between them, or is it just that the Drug Task Force is in the building and so is the CIT?
Which one of you?
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Deputy Lecko.
Mr. Chair, members, the Drug Task Force is a component of this and a portion of the building. The CIT is the main face of the building. This would be an area where they have the basement where they can house themselves. They're currently in a rental property right now, and they're outgrowing that as well. We thought we'd take advantage of the site, the size of the building, that maybe we could put the Drug Task Force. That's also a regional collaboration as well. It's not just the Dakota County Sheriff's Office. It includes all the cities within the county, as well as the city of Savage that comprise that state-funded drug task force. So they would take up a portion of the basement, lower level of that building. And there are some crosses, maybe Mike can talk about, as far as how the mental illness and CIT does cross into some of the drug use, and information sharing could be beneficial being in the same building.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. We do see that, I mean, you've got a regional drug task force, and when people are in crisis, it's not always that it's just a mental health crisis. There may be an economic crisis. There may be a family crisis. There may be a business crisis that this drug dealer that they're working with, too. And in all of that, we will work with, and we have worked with many people that are on drug task force to understand how to de-escalate a situation, how to talk someone into compliance, into finding help as opposed to confrontation. So I think it would work well, and I know just rubbing elbows and seeing each other on a daily basis, there would be an opportunity to share some of those skills back and forth.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it hasn't been my sort of awareness over these years that drug task force are groups that have really sort of gone down this line about de-escalation. It tends to be something of addressing force. So I'm really excited that maybe you're merging these two things together and we're actually looking at a different way of using Drug Task Force to go out there to make our community safer and address the issues of drugs in our communities. I'm assuming, though, they won't be going after prescribers of opioids.
Representative Rundeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a site location you could tell us and how?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rundeck, we have a site that's currently owned by the city of Inver Grove Heights right near the junction of Highways 52 and 55, Courthouse Boulevard and Concord Boulevard. And the city has offered us this is a site that the city owns. They're planning to build a fire station on a portion of it. They're excited about the opportunity to partner on this. And so they've offered us this site, which so is already owned by the city. We have in the materials, Mr. Apps is reminding us, a little diagram of sort of how the smart center will fit on that site.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Barr. It looks like really a neat project there, and done a lot of good homework, and the video was powerful, I thought. Just on a lighter note, though, I don't know if you plan to have an amendment or anything or want to do a different bill, but the previous representative for years and years had problems. I know he built this bridge, and this bridge really doesn't go anywhere, so maybe you could finish it. You know, it could be an amendment or something you could do. I mean, it was really a weak spot, so.
Very good point that you raised, Representative Lilly. Representative Sock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this training regionally offered, or is it in the paradigm of like a small region? Because I know that Olmsted County, both Sheriff and the City, Rochester, and various others are very embedded into CID training. So do they get that through you and you go down there, or what's the arrangement in for the rest of the state?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. What happened is for Rochester Olmsted County, we went down there over a three-year period and provided training in Olmsted County, bringing them in, and not only training for the officers responding, but also kind of the bones of how to put together a training and also how to put together a crisis intervention team. And from that, we developed their coaches, at which point now we have been able to support them, but they're standalone. And that's been our goal. It's also happened with the City of Duluth and St. Louis County, is to build out so other people can run with it.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. And final word of the day will be from Representative Jergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be brief. As you know, my district is part Cottage Grove in Washington County. It also spans into Dakota County. And I'm supportive of both of these projects. I've signed on to Representative Barr's bill as well. I don't see this as either or. As you can tell, that the projects are different. And I think this is more of an and. I think that we should consider strongly both projects.
Thank you. When do we meet? Tuesday? Next Tuesday we'll meet again. For now, this case.